Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking about the church and in particular pastors slash reverends and how they are dealing with their congregations. Are they being a little bit too loose in terms of what they say, how they speak to their congregations, or is this just the norm? And we're just seeing more of it being posted on social media. And what all of this means for the church today. Joining us is Dr. Kenyatta Gilbert. He's the Dean of Howard University School of Divinity and Reverend Dante King with DK Ministries. Dr. Gilbert, I wanted to finish allowing you to make your point. I think we were talking about whether or not just the fact that everything is on social media and where you can see every misstep of a pastor or leader of a church. Do you believe that that may kind of inhibit those who may want to lead not to do it because they'd be in a fishbowl more than they already are?
Right, right. Some will look at it as, you know, what we might perceive as a failing that will sort of kill a person's ministry. Sometimes it actually grows it, which is the very, you know, it's like a Trumpian effect, right? We think that the guy is down and out because, you know, he said something absolutely ridiculous and outrageous. And then next thing you know, he's celebrated for being out, you know, ridiculous and outrageous. And so sometimes
that's very good point.
Depending on that minister is, there are ways to spin even the negative so that folks will continue to support foolishness.
Okay, Reverend King. So now we're gonna come back. Now you've had two times of practice this. We're gonna go back to your points of this being irreverent and whether or not that's a good thing in church. I mean, I've been in church. I've had pastors where you laugh and you're like, hey, I know that. We might be of near the same age, and they make cultural references and it kind of pulls you in. I'm also old enough to know when I was little, you know, you had pastors who were just so much larger than life. And they were just more kind of sort of traditional, just going by the book, you know, what was in the Bible and staying on that message, or at least that's how I saw it. But maybe I wasn't old enough to know that they were still making cultural references throughout. So has that kind of run amok? And is there a fear that irreverency can turn into a little looseness where you don't feel like always maybe you're in church and this is the pastor, but just sort of somebody I know who's kind of talking shop, so to speak?
I think you have to be culturally relevant. Any pastor has to be, without crossing the lines of what's inappropriate or what's not scriptural. I love Jesus and trap music. And I preach hip hop songs all the time. I preached a sermon at a funeral the other day, and I preached Biggie Small, Born to Die, Life After Death, which is true. That's what really happens in life. And a parent came and said, Pastor, my 14-year-old daughter paid attention to your entire sermon. And that was a call for Christ at the end. Be irreverent. I think that's in the ear of the listener. What I may like someone older than me may not have a taste for, or vice versa. I think, as I said, you have to be culturally relevant. You have to be able to keep the foundation of what the church stands for, but still allow it to function different. The church cannot function the way it used to function. Social media has changed that. Some churches look like clubs. I don't have anything against that. Between the lights and the smoke and the fireworks that come up, I've seen it all. But is the function to win men and women to God? Is the function to preach the gospel? The function to be community leaders and to be advocates for those who are less fortunate than us? If the function is the same, I have no problem with that. I mean, if the foundation, I have no problem with the function. And so that's a thin line. I preach sermons that the two of you would find outrageous when I was in my 30s. As we mature and maturate, I mean, I can't preach that anymore, but I still think you have to be relevant to the culture which we live in, be able to relate to people that's going to listen to your sermons.
Do Dr. Gilbert, do traditionalists, on however you define that, still work in the church as leaders, as pastors, reverends? And also, I want both of you two to define for many of us, are those two terms interchangeable, reverend and pastor? And if not, what's the difference?
Yeah, so reverend typically means that someone has gone through an ordination process. a licensed minister is referred to a minister. Every reverend ought to be a minister. So it really has to do with credentialing more so than anything. I am not a traditional pastor, but I have a pastoral sort of role, even as the dean of a divinity school, right? But a pastor typically functions as a shepherd of a congregation, and they're responsible for nurturing and growing that particular ministry. Would you agree, Dr. King? Is there something?
Absolutely. And sometimes it depends on the denomination. Some denominations, you are reverend. Some denominations, you are elders. But as the dean said, it still has the same function.
Right. Let's talk about, and I know we're talking about pastors / reverends, but there's also this issue of folks coming to church, physically coming into the church. Where are we with that? And do pastors or reverends have anything to do with that? Or are we just talking about the pandemic? Or are we just talking about people are so much busier now that it's more difficult to get them to come to church? Or is it all of the above, just sort of a perfect storm? And would you agree that that is an issue now?
If I can.
You're right ahead.
I told our church when the pandemic was over and people started going everywhere else and people were afraid to come to church. And they said, Pastor, are we going back to church? Is it safe to come to church? I said, don't come to church first. Go to the club, go to the strip club, to the restaurant. Then I asked them, is it safe to come back to church? because
you are unconventional, Reverend King.
I'm very unconventional. Those places are still open. How come there's such a fear to come back to church? And I think some people have used that as an excuse. As great as social media is, social media has been a detriment, not just to the congregation, but to the pastors. Because you can often, I hate to say this, you can sit home or sit in your church and preach with little attendance, have thousands watching you, and the giving is still good. I mean, I'm just going to be honest. Some pastors, some churches did better when people weren't in church than they did when people were in church. So it's a kind of double-edged sword, if you will.
Do you want to address that, Dr. Gilbert? Can it be a good thing that more folks are staying home, but yet that might mean more of them are attending through online services? Where are we with that? How should we see the decreasing numbers of people being in the physical building? Yeah.
I think the best of both worlds, and we're exploring this in this educational context, is having some hybrid of the two. So if you're doing things strictly online, the people are going to gravitate to the church that has the best, right, quality and visual, and they're going to gravitate to I think more so the teacher. The preacher who has not just the preaching gift, whereby call and response sort of feeds the event itself. But what the pandemic revealed was, I think, that there are certain ministers in the culture who really prize teaching the word in a way that does not require a lot of antiphonal feedback. And it revealed who a level of competence and incompetence in terms of professional clerical accountability. And I think it sort of was a litmus test of who was best prepared for the moment.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. And I will say this, millennials and younger people are coming back to church, but they're not coming with the okie doke. And I've said this openly, you can't preach the okie doke. You have to have context behind what you're saying. When I grew up, the bishop could say whatever he said, and he said, is it true? A bishop said it was true. Like, Pastor, show me where it's in the scripture. And I like it, as the professor said, it lets you know who's competent to do this. I like to be challenged. If I say something, I should be able to back it up biblically and give you the context in which I said it under. I think it's a good thing for the church. It's healthy.
Do you feel that there is more pressure on the Reverend now?
Absolutely. I feel a lot more pressure. Like, they're asking questions. My daughter said something to me that blew my mind. One day she held up her cell phone and she said, "Dad," and she's a junior at Towson. She said, "Dad, if it's not here, it doesn't exist." That's challenging. As a professor said, it's challenging now to know that if they can't find you, you have 5 seconds to capture their attention. You don't exist. If your social media is not good, if your Instagram and TikTok. So it's very challenging, and that the word is still the word. But once again, I said, how do we present the word? It's very challenging to capture the attention of this generation.
What's your thoughts on that, Dr. Gilbert, about that pressure that's on now church leaders?
Yeah, I think the pressure is on. I think what we can see as an opportunity is that if we're preaching too much, I think our preaching grows thin. But if we're able to step back and say, wow, what gifts are in the community that I can encourage, or I can apprentice several, you know, ministers to actually have their moment. I don't know how ministers grow if they don't have opportunity, right? So you know, providing that space and being secure enough in your own ministry to coach, knowing where you are generationally, because quite frankly, I've felt like I haven't had that many mentors to show me the way. Mm-hmm. But the civil rights generation, they were more invested in mentoring the next generation because they were concerned about continuation.
Is part of that because the church was synonymous with activism? And do we see less of that now, and therefore you see less mentors? Do you see a connection to that, either Reverend King or Dr. Gilbert?
The civil rights movement, the Black Lives Matter, that movement was the first civil rights movement that the church wasn't the head of, where the church took a back seat, where other people came up and younger people came up. And as the professor said, the church wasn't the epicenter where it used to be. We gather together, we mobilize, we strategize, we had a plan for our community. It wasn't. And that speaks volumes to where the church is. Volumes. And sadly, we're not in the forefront. Some of us are. We have some pastors. We galvanize. You see us at different things. But a lot of churches have, I think, abandoned, unfortunately, the part of the civil rights movement that's very important.
Why do you think that is, Reverend King?
Y'all get me in trouble. I'll say
you have good trouble.
Good trouble because we've become complacent. We've got money now. We've got Bentleys and Benzes now, and we got mega churches now. Think about when Dr. King was there. A mega church was 200 members. We got thousands of members now. So what urgency is there for me to be out there protesting? I can ride the bus. I can get to work. I don't need to boycott anymore. You know, I live behind the gate. You know what I'm saying? So my children are in private school, so I don't feel the urgency that the church has to do those things. But there are other areas. I was telling a friend of mine yesterday, there's no reason that the church, I'm just saying, the metropolitan area, with all the churches we have, we don't own the bank, we don't own the school, we don't own the hospital. So these kind of things we have to come together, mobilize on, if we're going to get the next generation to believe in the church and the functionality of the ministry.
And Dr. Gilbert, I want to get back to that because you really opened the door to that, you know, when you were talking about mentors and then I sort of picked up on the social activism of it. Can that change? Do you see that changing? Is that a cyclical thing or because of where we are? And, you know, I don't want to overuse the social media aspect of it, but it has democratized so much of the different movements. Everyone can kind of join in their own way. Everyone can start a protest. You don't really need a one person to kind of lead it. So do you see that changing for the church, or do you see that horse is out of the barn now, where the churches have been, especially Black churches too, have become so big and you have these mega churches, it's just going to change the structure of how they're involved with social activism? Or is that too broad of a point to make, you know, because there may be other churches that are more involved than I'm not specifying?
I think in terms of relevance, relevance to me is not always about trends, keeping up with trends. Relevance is, can you speak to Gaza? Can you speak to matters pertaining to same-sex relationships and marriage. Can you speak to, without it being such a big deal?
But isn't that the difficult, isn't that where your training comes in, right? Where you, how do you do that without polarizing, or is there no way not to do it without polarizing?
Yeah, well, that's, it's tough. It really is tough. But if, for example, if I were to preach a sermon and I know that the issue is controversial, not everybody's going to agree with what I'm saying, then I sort of want to invite people into it, right? I want a conversation. I'm seeking a dialogue. I'm not seeking necessarily to win you over to my position as much as I want you to think about these are the slate of moral options that I'm placing on the table. Think through yours. And if you think through yours and you can frame that biblically, you can frame it through some measure of theological interpretation, then, hey, you know, you've earned your right to speak. But if it's just about your opinion, then everybody has an opinion, right? So
exactly.
So, yeah, go ahead.
And I think we fail to realize that the one that we idolized, a 30-year-old young black man who started Christianity, was radical. He spoke to the powers to be. He was 30 years old. If Jesus was living nowadays, he would have skinny jeans on and New Balance. We act like he was 80 years old. He was 30, died at 33, right. And he was radical. He spoke truth to power unapologetically. He stirred up the system, so the gospel always isn't going to be convenient for those who hear it. He spoke the issues in his days, in his social context, that were very controversial. He had people hanging around him. Mary Magdalene, I mean, she was, you know, but he didn't mind taking on the controversy for the furtherance of the gospel. And I think we have to do what the professor said. It's controversial. Sometimes you're going to say things that people are not going to agree with, or the church is not ready to have these conversations about the LGBTQ community. They're going to have the conversations about unwed mothers, but it has to happen. It's the world we're living in.
In the world we're living in, Reverend King, we've talked about social media. How can the church use that? Because in some ways, I think, you know, we've sort of talked about the disadvantages of it, where, you know, you see every little misstep a pastor or reverend can take. How can you use it? How can the church and church leaders use it to its advantage?
To speak to issues that be, I found it very alarming. The situation happened where a famous gentleman had a video of him accosting a young lady. And I can count on one hand the pastors who spoke up about it, spoke anything against it. That's alarming to me. You have a platform that thousands of people can actually
Now, I'm just going to address it from the news angle. I'll say it if this is what you're talking about. We're talking about the P. Diddy and the video.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't know I could say that. But I found it alarming that churches did not address it. Domestic violence is something the church never talks about. We talk about the homosexuals now. We crucify them. Mm-hmm. We don't want to talk about domestic violence, and some of the perpetrators are actually in leadership. So until the church is really to have a real conversation and to address some real issues, we'll be where we are.
Mm-hmm. And the video has gone viral, and it's, you know, and it's alleged, but eyes can see what is going on. But Dr. Gilbert, in your mentoring, because you are a mentor, right? You're going to have these students who are coming through. Does that get talked about what you can talk about as a reverend and as a pastor, or is it more make sure you're steeped in the knowledge of the Bible and to be able to interpret that, but yet the School of Divinity really doesn't get into maybe talking about, I'm going to say issues that are not in the Bible, but so much of what we talk about is actually in the Bible. So I'm maybe giving a rhetorical question.
Right. So all spaces are not created equally. So for example, a divinity school and a seminary, and even if you want to get a little more specific, a Bible college or something that a part of their mission is to indoctrinate you in a particular way. A divinity school really wants you to think theologically, right? We are as diverse in terms of denominational traditions as you can get at the Divinity School at Howard. However, we still have an obligation to make sure that once you leave our doors, you will be able to know how to to teach, know how to preach, know how to listen to something very critically, learn how to, you know, you'll have, you know, pastoral care moments where you need to know how to hold a bereaved family's hand, how to pray for them. Like, all of these things, I think, are a part of a good quality theological education. But you'll find that there are spaces that will say you can only do it this way. And if you don't do it this way, this is not God's way, right? But that's not who we are, right? That's not what I want our students to come away with. They need some formation, because you can come to a place like this and absolutely lose your faith. You come because you start questioning everything, and not all things can be reconciled with just the Bible. I mean, really, I mean, that in it of itself is a statement to make, is that there are things in the Bible that are contradictory. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a theological compass that says, okay, my theology, my view of God is aligned with this, then I can make the Bible say what the Bible, I can talk about genocide and
justify it,
right? You know,
and so, we saw this back in during slavery times, right? Slavery was justified based on, you know, certain things in the Bible, exactly, that slave owners would use. So,
exactly.
Reverend King, we have a few moments left. I want to make sure I get in a couple other things. Do you have to preach as a pastor, and both of you as African-American reverends and pastors, do you have to preach differently to a African-American based congregation?
It's funny. I'm sitting here actually literally thinking about this. I made a statement that it's difficult for my oppressor to be my savior. I'm doing a podcast, working on a podcast entitled I'm Too Black to Be a Christian. I'm a believer, I'm a follower, I'm a disciple, but it's a whole nother subject. So we have to address these issues. Like I said, the generation is coming up now, they're asking these questions, like, how does this work? You know, how was somebody named Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and Mary and Elizabeth? Really? Their name was Elizabeth? And so we cannot be afraid of these questions and answer as the professor in this totality. Realize that the Bible was composed of men. Men decided the 66 books that should be in the Bible. God did not send the Bible down from heaven and it landed there. And it was, no, it wasn't. And until we let the people understand the truth of the Word of God, we believe in God. We understand who He is, and we can back it up biblically. But some things, man-made concepts, some things sits in layman social context, and we have to teach the people the truth of the Bible. And some things are, I don't want to get in trouble, some things don't even apply to us to this day. And you cannot make it applicable and would have talked to a whole nother generation. So, yeah, we have to begin to teach the truth of the Bible. And people need to understand, especially in the African-American community, that we're not some lowly, weak Gentiles that can barely make it and woe is us. And we got to wait till we get to heaven and get, no, I'm going to get my stuff here and in heaven. I can be wealthy here and still be saved. So we have to change the narrative of the gospel that was given to us to keep us oppressed.
In our last few moments, Dr. Gilbert, do you have any other final thoughts, maybe something that I haven't asked that you feel is important to share before we leave out tonight?
Yeah, well, Pastor King touched on something about, you know, wealth and sort of doing ministry in a capitalistic sort of environment. I think you can. I think we ought to pursue good stewardship so that we leave behind something. Every generation doesn't have to create something from scratch, right? If we're able to put ourselves in a position where we are philanthropists,
yes,
in the work that we do, then I think we have done a service to our generation and to the next generation that's coming. I find it very challenging, however, when you pursue wealth, that you have to connect it with social responsibility. Mm-hmm. If you're not socially responsible, then it becomes a nightmare. You'll start letting the market drive your ministry. Yes. When the mission of Christ should be driving your ministry, right? Mm-hmm. So I would say that, maybe a final thought.
That's a good final thought. Dr. Gilbert, if folks wanted to find out more about Howard's School of Divinity or either contact you directly, how would they do that?
Yeah, so they can go to our website, divinity.howard.edu. And we just launched a new project, actually a center in Howard's School of Divinity. It's called the Black Congregations Resource Center. So blackcongregations.org will give you more information about that.
And same for you, Reverend King. If folks wanted to get in touch with you and your ministry, how would they do so?
On all social media platforms, it's at D-O-K-I-N-G. That's Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and for the few people that's still on MySpace.
Reverend King, Dr. Gilbert, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Great conversation, and thank you for sharing your expertise. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you. Blessings.
That's the Daily Drum for this Monday, June 3rd. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Have a great night.